like getting married, Nathan.
Careful now.
Exceptionally brilliant for a lot of people, and Mbappe has that quality.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
David Moyle, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, lads. How are we?
Let's start with England, right? Owen is putting them in the, it was grand level of performance. I thought they were a bit better than that. I thought they were pretty good, considering their track record of never having won an opening tournament game in the Euros, considering all the stuff that they'd had to deal with in the build-up, considering all the talk about whether or not they were going to take the knee, and they were going to take the knee, and all that kind of stuff that happened, and the fact that they're at home. I thought that was a very composed performance, where they controlled the ball and weren't in any threat at under any threat at any point from a reasonable Croatia side.
No, I agree with you. I think it was a very professional performance. Obviously, look, we've been, everybody across Ireland, England has been trying to guess what, you know, Gareth Southgate's starting 11 was going to be. And then we see the team sheet. You hear it's been leaked a few hours before. You see Trippier's at left back, Sterling starting. You know, Calvin Phillips is in midfield. You're kind of, so many question marks are raised. But the performance was, I wouldn't say it was brilliant. It was very good. They were very professional. You know, they're probably best period was the first 20 minutes when they kind of got on the ball. They dominated possession. They looked to create chances, of course. Phil Foden had that chance to hit the post. But throughout the game, they looked... I've not seen England play like that in many major tournaments, kind of, you know, where they're controlled and they try to dictate the pace, you know, from start to finish. Of course, Croatia were always going to get some momentum, get back into it. But like you said there, Croatia never really looked like scoring until probably the last 10 or 15 minutes when they were throwing everything to get an equaliser. It was a very, very professional performance. And of course, look, a lot of question marks over his selection. And oh, he was justified because inevitably, you know, Trippier had a good game. Albeit I'd want to see a lot more from him going forward because I think he has that in the locker. Alvin Phillips is exceptional in midfield, probably man of the match. Or Sterling gets the goal, which inevitably wins them the game.
Trippier's throw-in was a bit like Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady at one stage where he threw Raheem Sterling open to create a chance at the edge of the box. I haven't seen that before. Is that, I saw somebody saying that's a worked on move in training. Is that a worked on move in training or is that just a fluky, brilliant throw-in?
Definitely. Look, it's like anything, you know, Jar. If you have players with certain capabilities like a long throw, it's stuff you're going to work on. I think I watched a lot of England in, you know, their warm-up friendly games against Austria mainly where, you know, watching Harry Kane that he's going to come short. So you know that you're going to need wingers that are going to run in behind. Phil Foden didn't do a lot of it yesterday, but Sterling did. That's probably when we see Raheem at his best. So it's going to be something that they've looked at. How can we get, you know, Sterling running in behind? If it comes from a throw-in, something you will work on. There'll be little two or three movements, kind of get him going and then create space for him. But when you've got someone with his pace, and like you said, if he's got a long throw, then it's going to be something they'll work on because, you know, Arsene Wenger used to go on about it. You know, he's often advocated to change throw-ins that it should nearly be kicked in because there's some crazy stat that I think it's like 80% of the time you actually lose possession from throw-ins. So it will be something that England will have looked at. Southgate's, you know, brought in striker specialists, set-piece specialists. Of course, we all know Liverpool have a throw-in specialist, so it will be something they've worked on.
I sometimes find, David, when it comes to England at a major tournament, they go into these early games and they do look excellent early in a tournament, and I mean early in a first game of a tournament, and a strange moment happens where there is a relatively unheard of striker who can just put the ball in the back of the net in a poxy manner, and all of a sudden England don't come away with the early result that they should come away with at a major tournament. So do they deserve credit for Croatia not getting a poxy chance yesterday? Because it just seemed that Croatia were so average yesterday, but I presume there'll be people making a case today that England deserve credit for how average they looked.
Yeah. Croatia, I was expecting a lot more. Obviously, their team is aging. You know, Brozovic, Modric, they're both, you know, old. I expect a lot more from them. But you've got to give credit to England in the way in which they dealt with them. You know, they tried to control the game. They kept the ball, limited them. Like, of course, there's been the question mark over Harry Maguire's fitness, whether or not he would, you know, be fit and available. Obviously, coming back into training the last few days. I know people would have said there's no chance he could have played, but and you're kind of the main centre back, you know, you kind of put your hand up to say, I want to play. Southgate's obviously made the tough decision to go with Mings and Stones, but Mings was very poor for the standards he set for himself this season in the warm-up games. I thought he was really solid. Him and Stones, you know, dealt with everything that came their way. So you've got to take, like, you can look at the positives on it. England going into the first game, they win 1-0. You get the 3 points on the board. Like Ger said there, it's the first game they've won the European Championship, or first opening game they've won. And they keep a clean sheet. So there's a lot of positives for them to take. Look, they've got 3 points on the board going into the Scotland game. I know they play today, but it's a case of they've got momentum and, you know, there's a feel-good factor around that change room now.
Well, the momentum thing is going to be interesting, David, because is that the midfield three then that you just persist with and allow them to build up that cohesion over the next little while and just don't touch it because they've already built up this winning habit now?
That's, you know, Owen, that's the million-dollar question. Before the, you know, the kickoff against Croatia, everyone expected Grealish to start. You know, he is the maverick. He is someone who's capable of doing something, you know, and he's not gone with him. He didn't even bring him on, but you expect Grealish to have some significant role. Of course, you know, Trippier playing left back, will he continue with that? Obviously, it's a long tournament, but it's like at the same time, you know, those 11 who have played, they put in a really good performance. They've beaten Croatia, obviously beat them in 2018. It's very hard to change, you know, a winning team. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Gareth does do going forward, because, like you said, his team has won. There's good players on the bench that we probably would have expected to start, like even Jadon Sancho and Ben Chilwell missing out in the 23-man squad. It's a long tournament. Does he bring them back in? Of course, there's going to be, you know, setbacks with injuries, etc. But it's certainly one that he has to find a way to keep them all happy and keep them all fresh. Whether he changes, you know, makes changes for the Scotland game, who knows?
Who do you think is actually keeping Grealish out of the team? Is it Mount? Is it Foden? Does he consider Grealish a forward or a midfielder? Or is it is it possibly Calvin Phillips who's keeping him out of the team?
I think it's probably more Raheem.
Right.
I know Jack could potentially play as an 8 or as a 10. He seemed to be deployed, you know, more high up on the left. That's where I kind of think you see the best of him, because defensively he's probably not as acute as some of the other ones, you know, working back. But that's what you get with a player like Jack Grealish, who wants to get forward, wants to make things happen. We've seen his assists and the chances he creates with Aston Villa. I think it's more, he's a very, very different type of player than Raheem. I think the reason why Gareth went with him is, you know, Raheem's, you know, so quick, and he offers that, you know, running in behind all the time. We know Harry Kane drops deep. But if Harry Kane is dropping deep to get on the ball to try and make something happen, you need players running in behind, and it has to be a yo-yo effect. And I think Grealish is a bit similar to Kane, and they want to come and get on the ball and make it happen, you know, deep down, be the one that's putting the ball through. I just find there's probably an imbalance if Grealish and Kane kind of play together, if he plays them off the left. Because Foden's another one, you know, who wants to come and get the ball. He'll run in behind, yes, but not as much as Raheem. So you could make a case for playing midfield, but you're not going to get the defensive duties out of Jack Grealish. That's inevitably why Aston Villa moved him forward. Obviously, he played as a 10 in the Championship, but then when he got into the Premier League, they have to push him higher up and play him from the left. It'll be certainly interesting to see what Gareth does do, you know, because you expect Grealish to get some game time and, you know, be a key player for England.
Why did Calvin Phillips look so good yesterday, David, and why has he looked so good playing for England? What is it about his skill set that he brings so much to this England team?
I think he's very composed on the ball. Nothing seems to faze him. He strikes me kind of as one of those players that could, if he played in a game in League Two today, he'd still look very good. The best way to probably describe it is he could play at any level, look very good. And I think, like, he just slotted in there, like he's been, I don't know how many caps he has. I don't think he has too many, but it almost felt that he'd been around for, you know, many years just playing. And Leeds, he doesn't get as forward as he did yesterday, but you just see he's great dynamic running in him, picking up that ball off Kyle Walker, driving at the heart of the Croatian defence. And then obviously the weight of pass is perfect for him, so he doesn't need to break his stride. He's just very level-headed. He's composed. Obviously, look, and highlight the range of passing, as we all know that if you've watched any bit of Leeds this season or even the game yesterday, he's very comfortable on the ball. it's just his demeanour, the way he goes about, like even, you know, building that partnership with Declan Rice. You know, Declan was probably one that wouldn't have grabbed the headlines yesterday, but he had a very good performance, and everything he did well. So there's a nice little balance with them. But then, you know, obviously he gave the nod to Calvin Phillips. You know, Jordan would have been fit and raring to go and wanting to play. Of course, he's not had the game time, but it's another big call from Garrett to, you know, put in someone who is not as experienced as, you know, someone like Henderson.
Yeah. Like, I mean, are you watching the tournament so far, David, as like with your midfielder cap on and thinking this has been a good tournament so far for the midfielders union? Like, I mean, I know you were watching the Netherlands and Italy as well, like from Barella to Wijnaldum to Calvin Phillips. Like the midfielders you expected to play well have all kind of dropped the mic a little bit the first couple of days and said, we are here and it's going to be our tournament.
I wouldn't have used the analogy, drop the mic. Like, yeah, but they have. I think everyone knows that you need defenders to be defending well. Your midfield, that's where games are won and lost. If you can win that upper battle, you know, that was the thing we all highlight. Phillips' performance, he got the better of, you know, Kovacic, Brozovic, Modric, you know, that was the big thing. And you touched on there, the Italian team were very good. They were impressive, albeit Turkey were awful. The Dutch, you know, they have a wonderful midfield in Wijnaldum, who we've seen for many years playing the Premier League. De Jong, who I'm a massive fan of. De Roon and all that. They just these players are finding ways to control games. And look, I know the Netherlands obviously lost their way after the hour mark. They were comfortable and left Ukraine back into the game. But midfielders really are kind of showing what's what and why it's so important to have good midfielders who are, you know, good technical players and who can keep the ball, obviously dictate the tempo of games.
You wanted to talk, Owen, about the Italians. It seems like, as you're saying, it seems like a long time ago, but they were pretty good.
Yeah, like, I mean, just kind of mentioning there, David, like, it's, you kind of touch on how bad Turkey were on Friday night. I think everybody who had them as dark horses are immediately looking for perhaps a darker horse to get on board with over the next little while, because they were just atrocious. Sometimes with this Italian team, there is this disconnect, it feels, between some of their club form and their national form. Like Immobile may be the perfect example of that, like this perfectly sized fish in a perfectly sized pond when he plays for Lazio, and then maybe a little bit of a fish out of water when he actually plays with Italy. So is this the start of something new from him and his teammates, and how impressive was it from their perspective on Friday night?
Of course, look, you know, Mancini's come in and he's steadied the ship. Obviously they've had the last two tournaments, whatever. They've kind of come in and they have this huge unbeaten run going. I think that's 9 clean sheets in a row. Like Mancini bringing back in Chiellini and Bonucci, I think it's like 200 caps between the two of them. Like, they're both stalwarts who've been around for many years. But that, a lot of people have raised question marks about, you know, if they go deeper into the tournament, will they be able to survive against, you know, bigger nations or the better teams? I think they will be. They're two wonderful players who've been around a long time, and you even see Chiellini the other night, like bombing down from centre back into, you know, Turkey's half, trying to get crosses in or trying to block clearances, everything. I think there's just a nice balance with Italy. I think they'd lost their way, and I think Mancini's brought that connection back, as you said, to the fans, because I think the biggest thing for Italy is they've always really had like a number 10 that would, you know, stand out, whether it be Baggio, Del Piero, Totti or whatever. They don't seem to kind of have that maverick player up. And there seems to be just a good balance of all good guys who are desperate to do well for the Italian shirt. And, you know, there is a good feel factor with them. You know, momentum in these tournaments is massive. I think it was Antoine Griezmann said there recently, it's you're 7 games away. Like, Italy be looking, that's 1 game down. We've got 6 to go to potentially winning the tournament. It was a good, comfortable performance. Obviously, they've got Verratti to come back into the team, who is a massive player for them. So I'm expecting big things. Italy were, you know, the team I tipped as a dark horse with a Immobile top goal scorer. So I'm happy he's off the mark, and, you know, Italy have won 3-0.
Yeah, two quick things struck me from the weekend. One, Michel Platini, what a genius. The idea of having the tournament in a bunch of different host cities. How jealous I feel now that the games aren't going to be in Ireland, and, you know, the Ireland games that we never qualified for. Like, it was a brilliant idea, and actually in future when we could all go to these places and have little mini festivals all around Europe, I think it's now proven to be a good idea. And then the second thing is the bloated tournament that everybody's given out about. actually, you know what? It's kind of good because it means that all the good teams are going to have some warm-up games. They're going to get the opportunity to find their best sides. And the quarterfinals, semifinals and final should actually be all the best teams in Europe fully primed. I don't know. I kind of feel like it's a win-win so far.
No, it is. And do you know what? There's been a very good standard of football. There's not really been any game where you've kind of like, you know, all in the sleep watching or whatever. There's been a bit of excitement. Of course, you can highlight little parts and moments in games. In certain games, has been, you know, the weather has been a massive factor. You look at England, Croatia with the sun and that's going to be very difficult. But every game has been, you know, very good. And I'm with you, Jared, that I do like the way that, you know, obviously there's games, Wembley, Baku, of course, you know, Holland playing Amsterdam, Italy playing in Rome. There's all that kind of feel-good factor. And of course, I heard Owen saying earlier there at the start of the show, like, you know, having that, you know, 20 to 25,000 fans in there, there's a nice kind of feel. It's like even in the opening ceremony, listening to Andrea Bocelli, and then obviously, you know, in Italy, it was a cut to the crowd and some fellas like, you know, looking elsewhere, and then there's a scream for a penalty and he's not even looking, he screams, and there is. And, you know, the tournament so far has been really good and, you know, I'm really enjoying it.
Like, I mean, as somebody who tipped Italy and Immobile for top scorer, once you hear Bocelli on Friday night, you're like, this is sorted. This is in the bag.
Oh, that was it. I was sitting there all emotional, listening to Andrea. I'm a big fan. Of course, then when Italy do the business, obviously I know the Marilone goal at the start, but I was kind of like, come on, Immobile, I'm going to have to hang on my hat on you. So he's got 1-1, so I'll take that. I know Lukaku's got 2, but I have faith. I have faith in the Italians.
Justifiably so. Scotland are in action today. This is a team, there hasn't been too many teams so far you've seen and gone, okay, I can see them being one of those unexpected countries to make a surge. I think the Scots might be capable of doing something. I think they've just got enough peppered talent through the team and a real strong sense of unity and an underdog spirit, all the kind of stuff that you would expect a team to need to be able to make some noise. What do you think? Can they make some noise?
I think they will make noise, yeah. Obviously, I know you've got the Czech Republic today, but it'd be very, very hard for them not to have one eye on England, you know, knowing that they're around the corner because a lot of these lads are playing in the, you know, the Premier League. They'll have teammates, as they've come against many times. You know, I think they will. I just like what Steve Clarke's kind of built. There's a very good togetherness about the squad. It's almost, I get the impression, it's almost like a club feel about them. All the lads seem to get on really well. There's no big egos or big characters. Like, of course, most people are well aware. I know Andy Robertson from my time playing with him. He would be the biggest player in that, you know, in that group. And like, he's a very level-headed guy. You know, there's no ego there. There's nothing. Fresh off winning the Champions League and Premier League, there's nothing with him. And it just seems to be, you know, a good feel factor about them. And they've got some, you know, very good players, obviously with McTominay, McGinn, and Tierney, Robertson. It's just something nice about them. So I'm intrigued to see how they're going to get on today. Obviously, I would like to see them do well. And obviously, you're hoping that they win, kind of going down to Wembley on Friday for the England game where there's kind of like fireworks and that.
Yeah, plenty for us to get our teeth stuck into. David, good to have you back. Time to say goodbye, though. If you can get my Andrea, which what?
I like it.
Can you give us a blast?
Well, Conte to party Euro.
Yeah. Oh,
I'm not singing it for you. Don't worry. No. I'm not. If Italy win the Euros and Immobile top goal scorer, I'll sing the entire song for you in Italian.
Hey, there you go. That's a promise. Yeah. You got to be aware. John Giles made that promise to us a long time ago about singing You'll Never Walk Alone if Liverpool win the Champions League. And he had to come in studio and he did it for us. So we've got a track record here of people making promises.
I think if I'm right and Italy do win the Euros and Immobile is top goal scorer, I'll fly out to Rome. And I'll sing it at the Coliseum. Myself in Immobile on top, holding my shoulder.
Oh, perfect.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.